Welcome to the Peru Tech Bytes podcast with Nick Damiani and John Mitchell. Our podcasts are designed to help teachers navigate the murky waters of appropriate technology use in their classrooms. Let's get started.
Welcome to another edition of the Tech Bytes podcast. I'm John Mitchell, and I'm joined, as usual, by my illustrious co-host, Mr. Nick Damiani. How's it going, buddy?
Illustrious. Always make me laugh with that. I'm doing well, John.
You are illustrious.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good. You know, as we tape this, it's actually Valentine's Day.
So, oh, yes.
You know, thank you for being here and being my Valentine.
Well, we match today.
We do. We do match today.
That, right?
Absolutely. Great lines, right?
So we wanted to take the opportunity and have a quick discussion to further expound on the first conversation we had had a few weeks back on the area of AI and its role in education. There are some concerns. So we're going to hit a little bit today on just the concerns that are out there with it. And to help deepen our conversation and understanding, we are joined by Mr. Ryan Breen. How are you doing today, Ryan?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Yeah, so Ryan is a technology teaching assistant in our primary building. So he pushes into classrooms and he helps with technology use with the students and he supports teachers with their instructional use of technology. So thanks for taking the time to join us, Ryan.
No, thanks for having me.
So this area of artificial intelligence in education, specifically the generative AI models that have become extremely popular, whether it's large language models like ChatGPT or image generators and those types of things, they've become quite common, very popular. They're being used in a lot of industries and by a lot of different people.
I think one of the biggest things is how fast they've progressed, I think, in a short period of time.
Yeah, they have not been around too long in the grand scheme of things, but they have changed and updated and morphed exponentially, essentially. So some of the concerns that we wanted to talk about were some of the concerns that have gotten brought up through some conversations we've had with teachers and then through some trainings and conferences we've attended. They're the traditional concerns that are out there in relationship to the topic. So one of them is the use of bias and discriminatory information in these models. So a lot of these models have to be trained, and there's data that is put into the models, and then the potential for these models to inherit biases because they appear in the training data. So basically, the models are only going to be using the data that's put in.
Right.
And that data comes from a perspective, right? So that being said, there's limited visibility as to how these models come up with the information that they put out, right? Like you don't get much insight into how they generate the information, how they pool together the data that goes in because it's very proprietary and none of these companies want to really share that information. So what are some of the biases that we've seen with these models?
I know culturally it seems like there have been some, you know, to where, you know, people may put in a certain prompt and then what comes out of that prompt, you know, could be either images or tendencies that may not really be applicable to what you've actually fed into the system, you know. And like you're saying, it's based on a finite pool of what's actually put in. So, yeah.
Yeah. One of the stories that was shared was there was a video on, I think it was the Buffalo Bills website during training camp. And the video had players on the team share their name, and the AI model generated an image based on the name that was put in. And you had, you know, a variety of professional athletes, African-American men, you know, sharing their names, and all of the images that were being generated were middle-aged white guys, essentially. So a very limited perspective, that was being shared. And actually one of the players, like finally, it was like probably the fifth or sixth player that did it, like saw the image and he was like, oh, I'm offended by that. And then that just presents a lot of you know, a lot of questions that you can have about the training data that goes in and the possible prejudices and stereotypes that can come out from that data.
Yeah, one of the common things that you say in programming or whatever is garbage in, garbage out, right? So if you're only feeding with these AI models a completely slanted mindset, you will only receive the slanted mindset in return. It doesn't matter the prompt or the area that you're attempting to deliver into. And that goes on both sides of the conversations, right? It can be slanted towards one way or slanted towards the other. But if you don't have equal inputs, there's no way
you're getting one side.
Yeah, it's only a machine. It might be a very smart machine, but it still is only an if-then program that can generate so much stuff.
Right. Great point. Fantastic point. Yeah. Because you're 100% spot on with that. Now, from the classroom perspective, as you use these models, like, it's on us as the human beings and the thinkers to critically analyze the information that does come out and really determine, is that appropriate content? Is that meeting what I need it to do, you know, for the class or for students? So we have to look at everything with a critical lens, essentially. Another one of the possible, like one of the popular concerns is the ability of these generative AI models to create these deep fakes. And I know as we come upon the election season, this is going to run rampant with the how far these models have advanced in their ability to create these deep fakes. And essentially, a deep fake is when you can get images imposed on others, like face swapping, those types of things, where you can do voiceovers that to the point where these models will actually match the voiceover to the creases of the, you know, the person's mouth, to where it really looks like it's someone saying something that they never actually said. And it's all with the intent to potentially blackmail, you know, defame somebody's character and manipulate a way of thought.
I have a question, you know, with that. So obviously that can be a destructive use, right? You know, but one of the conferences we went to recently, I went to one of the workshops, and there was someone gave an example of he had recorded a quick message that he did, but then there was some software that it took him in his own face and voice and did the whole thing in Japanese. You know what I mean? Would that still be considered a deep fake? Do you know what I mean? I'm just wondering.
I would think so. Anything that cross-generates from what would be considered...
Even if it was originally there. Do you know what I mean?
Well, but what you're looking at is more the software generation of it, right?
Okay.
Because the gentleman probably doesn't speak Japanese.
Not at all.
But that is how developed these systems are right now.
Yeah.
And whereas it, like you were saying, anything that we have on online nowadays can be more often than not manipulated for fun uses and distractive uses, but also destructive uses. Like, one of the key ways when I look at it to talk about a deep fake or talk about a video or something is the platform that it's coming up on, right? If you're on Reddit, if you're on 4chan, 8chan, if you're seeing things bleed into Facebook and X, which what used to be Twitter, but you're not seeing any reputable sites that you can track it back to, there's a good chance you're looking at false information.
And I think it stems on what the purpose of the information is. So if I'm a classroom teacher and I have a student who speaks Japanese and I've just delivered a lesson in English, and I want to provide that student with a tool in their own language, in their authentic language, and I can utilize that type of tool as if I'm speaking that Japanese, I want to make sure that it's actually translating my language properly, one, right?
Right.
But my intention is authentic and genuine and meant for something positive. Whereas these deep fakes, a lot of the times, they're main purpose is to manipulate and spread false information. So I think there's a little bit of both with it, with your question. I think, obviously it's not your voice, but it's being generated by a machine. You know, that's a sense of fake, right? It's not real. But at the same time, the intention isn't malicious in nature. Right. Whereas in these other situations, the intention is completely malicious in nature.
Absolutely.
Now, there are some ways to identify some of these deepfakes, especially along the lines of like image generation. So what are some things we've seen that are possible keys or tells to identify a deepfake?
One of the key things is anything that comes to an end or to a conclusion. A lot of times you can see imagery, especially with hands, feet, that if you look at where they blend back into what would be the background or foreground of the image, you'll see that it doesn't quite adapt right. And that's just because of the programming. One of the things we always were laughing about was the six fingers. Mm-hmm. So if you look at images, there was a popular image of a young boy that went around that everybody had said, oh, look at this. This is, you know, horrible. He was in a bad situation. But in truth, is when you looked at his hands had six fingers. The kid wasn't there at all.
Nope. So, like, fingers twisted.
Yeah.
Body parts twisted in odd ways. Like, that's one of the indicators. That's shared as a definitely as a very common theme amongst those image generation. I've also seen and heard that repetitive pieces in the background. So, for example, if you've got someone standing in the front of the picture, in the forefront, and then in the background you can see faces that repeat, mm-hmm. but from a distance you don't notice that, but when right. you get close and you really look at it with a critical lens, you can see that parts of that image are repeated, and then that's going to be another indication of that image being generated.
Because all of the images still are utilizing resources, mm-hmm. so in order for an image to be completely generated on that level, you more often than not have to have a human involved to finish out the artistic license of it. If right. it's completely computer generated, a computer is again just a tool, and it's going to
reuse what's been put in there.
Yeah, just keep clicking.
It's like, I don't have any more information, so I've got to make up.
It's going to make it up, and it's going to pull it from different pieces of information that have already been put in there, and it blends it together. Another big area, which is the one that I'd like to probably wrap up our conversation on, is the privacy concerns around these generative models. So essentially, the models collect data and they use that data to generate responses. Any information that you put into these models can potentially be collected. So from a privacy perspective, are you looking to put first names and date of births and social security numbers into these models?
Not unless you want them shared with everybody else.
Correct. That's the point there is whatever you put in to these models, whichever company owns that model, they now own that data. And it's also read in the fine print of those agreements when you sign up to use these models. Anything that you put into those models, that company can reuse mm-hmm. and store and use to better their models. So when it comes to privacy, I would look at these models as there is none. You don't have privacy when you're using these models. So as a teacher, what can I do to, like, how can I use these models but also not share private information?
Just avoid any PII or whatever, you know what I mean? Yeah, I hear you completely.
So if I'm looking at designing a lesson around some data that I have on the students, mm-hmm. just make sure that any of the data that I put in, like, it's anonymous. It's right. not tied to any type of student information. If I'm using a model to, you know, frame an IEP goal, I'm not going to put in my rough draft of that IEP goal containing any student information. So any of that PII that you mentioned, John, you exclude that from whatever your prompt is. And at no point in time are you putting any type of, you know, first and last names, you know, personal account information, anything along those lines. That's actually something that I've heard of some folks doing, not from a teacher side, but from the personal side, where they're using it to create a workout plan and they're copy and pasting information in from a document that might have their first and last name in it, and they're generating workout plans or dietary plans and those types of things. And just not a recommended route at all.
No, and especially too with even if you're piecemealing it in different times. So if you're using a first name one time, a last name another time, as you kind of slip in each of those bits of data, depending on what company it is, a web crawler or whatever can start mm-hmm. linking up mm-hmm. pretty easy.
Yeah, you're giving a piece to the puzzle, but that model is putting those pieces together.
Because that's exactly what that model is designed right. to do. They are designed to create something out of a little bit of information.
Right. They're going to essentially learn what you're putting in and tailor that. They're trying to tailor their responses to make the person entering the prompt happy, essentially. Like, they're designed that way. So recommendation number one on the privacy side, keep everything personal out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do not put in any PII information of your own, and absolutely, you know, definitely stay away from that when it comes to students.
For sure.
All right, so we hit on three specific areas, some privacy concerns, the concept of a deepfake, and then the biases and discriminatory information that can be generated and put into these models. I think, generally speaking, as an umbrella over the top of all three, you just want to really think about what you're using the tool for, and making sure that you are looking at all of the outputs with a very critical lens, and do not take it for what it is when it does generate a response. Use it as a resource, fantastic yep. resource, and I think in upcoming shows, we'll talk about what some of these resources can do and how they can impact the academic world and students, and really be tailored to support students and teachers. But I felt like it was necessary to really address some of these concerns before we move down that road.
Absolutely. Definitely. Well, Ryan, thank you for joining us today.
Definitely
some value
me.
Input there. And we look forward to talking to everyone soon.
You've been listening to the Peru Tech Bytes podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Google Podcast, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. If you enjoy the show, be sure to share with colleagues and friends, and follow us on Twitter at ndamianipcsd and jmitchellpcsd. Thanks again for listening, and remember, tech doesn't bite.